You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live. Next, featuring intimate and in-depth interviews with Black Hollywood's next edition of stars and influencers. Black Hollywood Live. Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, next.
Hello, guys. Welcome to Black Hollywood Live Next, where we profile Hollywood's up-and-coming stars. I'm your host, Jessica King, also the producer of Fox's hit show, Dish Nation. Check it out. And I'm joined by comedian extraordinaire...
Got it. What's up, guys? Nick Perdue here.
Wow, that was weak.
Nick Perdue here.
What's up, guys? Nick Perdue. Anyway... We have a very special guest today.
Right.
He's low on fuel, guys. Don't mind Nick. We have a very special guest today. Please welcome, from my crazy roommate, Hottie Williams.
Woo! Thank you, guys. My pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Man, it is my pleasure to be here.
No, it's our pleasure.
It is. How about we're both? How about we're mutually pleasure?
Okay, I'll take it.
How about that? That's what I always aim for.
Mutual pleasure, right?
There you go. I love your name, by the way. What's the background?
Well,
behind?
Thank you so much. I'll let my parents know.
Shout out to the parents.
Exactly. Shout out to the Williamses. They're doing a good job. It's actually an Indian name. I have another middle name, Prem. That's Prem. And Hadi is actually derived from Vishnu. It's one of the Hindu gods of Hinduism. And Prem means love in Sanskrit. So the idea behind the name was divine love.
Wow. Nice. Do you ever get confused if your friends are like, look at that Hadi over there? You're like, what?
Actually, I don't have too many friends to say that. But
look at that Hadi over there.
If I did, I would really side-eye them like, what did you just say?
Hey, bro. Look at that Hadi over there. What?
I don't know.
Check out that Hadi's booty. Right. What?
I don't know.
But it's funny. It's one of those things like being introduced. It's like when I say it, I'm like, oh, yeah, hey, my name is Hadi. It always gets a very interesting reaction. Guys half the time are like, dude, I ain't about to call you that. Like, that's not going to be how we relate to one another. They're like, it's like I just said delicious or something. So there's that side. And then women will kind of react like, oh, is that what you think? That's how you feel about yourself?
Great pickup line, buddy.
Exactly, right, kind of a thing. Like, But then there's ones who are like, oh, well, you are there. So, So it goes both ways.
Nice. I love it. Well, as you may have noticed, we take deep into your roots on this show here. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start from the very, 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 very beginning.
Oof, let's do it.
So when your mom was pregnant with you. Yeah. kidding. Not that far.
It was a great time for me, though, really.
The womb.
I was just hanging out, swimming, perfecting my backstroke, all that good stuff.
All right, but for real, you started in this industry at a very young age. At the age of 6, you were already familiar with the stage.
I was, it's funny. I started doing theater before I probably really knew what it was. I got involved doing spiritual plays, and that's where my first start was. So back hidden somewhere, there's 1990s video of me doing, doing these plays that I'm trying to recover so they don't get out. Wow. But
we actually have it, right? Here.
Cut to. Since you mentioned it. Yeah. But it's something that I started doing early, and I don't think I really identified clearly, this is what I want to do. But thinking back on it, it is something I think that I enjoyed. And as I got older, especially as I was going from middle school to high school, that's when I really got more serious about it. Mm-hmm. And actually, I got an agent, was taking classes, and was, actively pursuing, a career at it.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where I learned one of the most important things for me as far as just the business and how the ups and downs of it go. Because when I started, I was used to, being told that I was talented, that I was good, that I, that being nurtured and supported. And sometimes when you step out and start doing it for real, you don't always get that immediately. Yeah. You don't get that immediate feedback of, like, the thumbs up, the good job, kid. It's like, no, next. Well, yeah, don't worry about it. And so it was kind of tough. And I think after, you know, pursuing it so young, I really kind of got discouraged and stopped acting for a while. Because it was just like, this ain't fun. Like, going to these auditions and you know, kind of chasing these roles and then seeing your role on TV, like, that was my part.
That was mine.
So, you know, that kind of thing pushed me away from it. But it wasn't until I started doing theater again in high school that I kind of rekindled. Yeah, it really was like I rekindled that love for it.
So. Well, when you were a kid and you were doing it, you've mentioned in past interviews that your parents were very supportive of creativity and always encouraged you and your siblings to pursue those kind of creative endeavors. Do you think that had an influence on your love for doing the stage readings and the TV commercial work that you started doing?
It's funny because they always you know, told us we can kind of do what we wanted. They never set a course like, this is where you need to go. Mm-hmm. And so once, you know, we showed an interest in something, they would support it. Mm-hmm. And so when I expressed, like, hey, I want to do this, like, they were right there with it. Like, my mom was the one, you know, taking me back and forth to auditions because we lived in Calabasas, which for folks who don't know is like, you know, 30, 45 minutes from anything Hollywood related.
It's where the Kardashians live.
Oh, yeah. You say that now, it's like,
like,
exactly.
Oh, yeah, Kris Jenner.
I was like, oh, yeah, of course. We're down the hill from them. Yeah, exactly. But that support was right there. You know, otherwise, it's just like, you know, I'm stuck in Calabasas wishing I could, you know, do it. But they were really the ones who were able to make that happen for me.
Well, you know, a lot of child actors kind of go through this rebel phase as they grow up. For example, you have Miley Cyrus, who grew up out here, and she is blaming a lot of her current actions on the fact that she feels that she missed out on her childhood, and so she's being a child now. As someone who grew up in this industry, kind of intertwined in all of it, how do you feel about her comments? Do you ever relate to anything like that? Or?
I tell you, I don't really, because I didn't really have much success as a kid. Like, it wasn't like I had a whole, you know, a bunch of work that happened and, you know, my life changed and, you know, it wasn't that. My childhood was great, one, I mean, but it was pretty, I guess, regular when you think of, like, going to school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did, you know, I played sports for a time, and so it was, like, a lot of other things that I was doing. And then on top of that, you know, I would be going to acting classes and going to auditions. Mm-hmm. That was probably the aspect of my childhood that might have been different. But I had a childhood. And honestly, I look back on it now, like, that's one of the things that I appreciate about having some success now and being at an age where I can appreciate it, and it's not something where I feel like, oh, I'm missing out, you know. Being at a point where I'm, you know, I'm all right with it. I'm very much able to handle it. There's no, you know, Michael Jackson missed out on the childhood moments happening. It's like, nah, I'm cool. I had that time, and I value the fact that it was some adversity, because that kind of showed me that I did really want it, you know, because otherwise I would have gave up on it a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. That's good. So you grew up in Calabasas.
That's correct.
Right?
That is right.
West Coast LA kid. So growing up in LA or Calabasas, like, do you feel that it shaped you, you know, and the person you are now? Because, you know, these mean streets of Calabasas.
It's rough.
It's tough out there in the hills.
By the way. East side of Calabasas. Folks don't know. They're Kardashians. They're on the west side. They don't come over to the east side. They don't know how it gets down over there. No. Calabasas is a really, you know, it's a really nice area. You know, folks go there to retire and, you know, buy big houses on the hill and stuff. So, you know, growing up there, it definitely had an impact on, I guess, my viewing of things, because I went to school and grew up around folks who tended to be a lot wealthier than I was. And so I noticed that with them, there were a lot of things that they were given and kind of, you know, handed to. And with me, my folks, even though my folks did well, but not to that degree. And so I had a job when I was 14. Like, when I first started, you know, wanting things, that my parents didn't want to get. It was like, no, you're going to have to go.
You
need
to work for it.
Yeah, you're going to go get that. Go hop, throw on that Taco Bell hat, kid, and, you know, wrap burritos. So that's what I did. So there definitely was, you know, an aspect of you're going to have to, you know, go after and earn what you want. And so Calabasas, I definitely credit with, you know, giving me a, you know, a great starting point and, you know, a great. I mean, the education was fantastic. You know, I appreciate Calabasas now, but it was definitely like I was being, especially being black in Calabasas. It's for folks who don't know, there aren't too many of us
like
out
two of
there.
You out
there.
Yeah,
needle in a haystack.
Yeah, exactly. There aren't so many. It's like my family, like the Smiths. like it's there aren't a lot of us out there. So, you know, having that as an experience, I got kind of used to. I guess. Kind of standing out in that aspect. And, you know, just kind of, it's actually it was good practice for, I guess, navigating Hollywood a lot of the times, because you'll be in situations where, you know, you might be the one of few, you know, black folks around, and, you know, you got to be comfortable with that.
Right.
Sure, you can always go to like a Kardashian cookout, you know what I mean?
And, so you can feel right at home. Yeah, exactly. Because right they got nothing but brothers up there.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know.
Me and Lamar. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Me and home, we'll be hanging out.
You, Lamar, Kanye.
Kicking it.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. It's funny, though, but you know, it's true.
Yeah, I'll be right at home.
But now, you you did theater in high school, right?
Yes.
So what was your favorite production that you did when you were in high school?
Oh, that's easy, actually. We did a murder mystery night where I got to play a detective. And it wasn't just any detective. I got to... So at the time, my hair was a lot longer, right? I had got it into my head that I was going to grow this afro, and so that's exactly what I did. Like, if you look at high school pictures, you'd be like, what is wrong with that kid? Why does he think that's okay? So it was
talk
like
about
this...
standing out. Is
no,
it
exactly. If I didn't already, if it wasn't enough, I had like hair out to here, literally. And so I played this detective, and because like with the hair, and I put like this whole kind of like funky 70s twist on it. So he was kind of like this.
Like a bell-bottoms detective?
He was like a bell-bottoms detective who had like a little bit of a dragnet, hard-nosed twist. Wow. So it was like a real, it was a really fun thing to do. And, you know, I had this like long trench coat that was real like old school. Like it kind of reminds me of like Mod Squad-ish a little bit. I think that probably was what I was going for there. But that was, yeah, that one goes down in the history books for me because that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, after your murder mystery, you left the mean streets of Calabasas.
Man, I barely made it out, by the way.
To get your BFA at Howard University.
Yes, indeed.
So at this point, you already knew that you were interested in theater and acting. You were already in L.A., which is already kind of a one-up on a lot of people that have to make the trek across the country. So why was it important for you to continue your education rather than jumping right into acting and tackling Hollywood straight out of high school?
Well, college wasn't really an option. College was like, you're going to do it. It's, you know, my parents made that very clear from forever. So it wasn't a matter of, well, maybe I'll just, you know, skip it. Yeah. Nah, it wasn't really going to work that way. And actually, I didn't plan on leaving L.A. originally. Like, I got into SC and Loyola Marymount and Occidental, and I was going to pick one and stay here. But kind of fate intervened, and Howard had offered me a scholarship, and I went to visit and got, like, a first-hand taste of what it was like.
All these black people, what?
And let me tell you, it was over the course of a weekend where I got to stay in the dorms, and, like, they partnered me with some students who took me out, and they really showed me what this whole thing was about. And I'm like, oh, I could do this.
Yeah,
I could do this. I'm ready to get this on. So once that happened, I mean, I was glad to leave L.A. for something different. You know, D.C., at that time, it's, and even now, it's a completely different, you know, sensibility and the culturally, and the mix of people is different, and attitudes, and just, you know, it's, you know, geography, I think, determines a lot of, you know, what an environment is like. And so D.C. is much more city-like and compacted than L.A. being so spread out. And so, you know, I fully embraced the opportunity to do something new. And it was great. Leaving, I counted leaving LA at that time was one of the best things I've probably done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, looking back, do you think that the training that you should, because you studied theater there as well, right?
Yeah.
So looking back, do you think the training that you received there makes you a better actor today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's partly because of the training as far as things I did in class and lessons I learned and note taking and tests and all of that. But then part of it is, you know, a maturing process. And, you know, I think to be a great actor, you have to, you know, have to cultivate life experience. And so Howard was a lot of that for me. It was, you know, much like college can be for a lot of folks, you're on your own for the first time. And so you're discovering things about yourself. You're trying new things. You're, you know, you're meeting new people. You're doing a lot of things where you're, you know, growing into who you're going to be outside of, you know, that home that you come from that's familiar to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was, you know, a lot of those experiences coupled with, you know, the fantastic training that, you know, really helped to contribute to, you know, to where I am now. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned earlier in this interview, you know, you started acting and then you kind of stopped for a while and you weren't into it as much and then you got back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time when you were going to college, did it kind of give you a sense of comfort to know that at any given point in your life, you could always have something to fall back on, have like a plan B?
I didn't really think about it that much in college, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was having a blast. Like, I had a great time in college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that. I had...
They don't call it Chocolate City for nothing. So, that's all I'm going to say.
I had a very good time.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
And so... Wait, what was the question? I got distracted.
Plan B.
Right, yeah, Plan B. No, I didn't think, I don't think I was that forward thinking in college. I wasn't like, I don't think I spent a lot of time preparing for what I was going to do, which is, you know, probably not the best plan. I wouldn't, if I was, you know, talking to the youth, I wouldn't advise it, but... You know, I didn't really graduate with a set plan of what I was going to do. I figured I would come back here, and, you know, eventually that's what I did. But, you know, I enjoyed myself a lot there, and I learned a lot and met, you know, some incredible people. You know, a lot of the foundation of the folks who are closest to me now are in some way or form, you know, from Howard.
Is the number one reason you chose to go to Howard because... of their homecoming?
That's funny. Not at all, actually. And I only say that because I'm, you know, I didn't know about it. I didn't really experience it, you know, growing up. Word hadn't, believe it or not, traveled to Calabasas
about
the illustrious Howard homecoming. I don't know. I missed that newsletter, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention when that was out.
That's funny.
So I didn't know about that part of it. It was like, they had offered me a scholarship, which, you know, was amazing. And then I went and was like, it spoke to me. It was like, this is the place. This is where you should be, you know. But now I'll be like, yes, I enjoyed those as well.
So clearly, I think what we have gathered from these past 5 minutes and talking about Howard University is that you had a blast.
I guess if you want to put a footnote on it and just boil it down and simplify, yes.
Blast.
You could say that. You could simplify it and you'd be safe saying it.
And you
Absolutely.
Have also mentioned in interviews, you've credited it as an experience of a lifetime. I mean, let us in on the secret. Like, what was like your craziest story from your 4 years
I will not let you in on my craziest story, but, you know, I think...
Second craziest.
The second craziest?
What were some of the...
It's okay, so I will... I'll relate part of a story, so...
Part of a story?
What, dang, I hadn't even started yet, and you're already giving me the upset for it? I'm gonna share. Okay, so there was a time when... the thing about going to Howard and I think with HBCUs, with dormitories, visitation is a big deal. So especially when you're, you know, like a freshman and you have a boys' dorm and you got a girls' dorm. And you have to check in. You can't just walk in. That's what I said when I got there. It was like, you're making it so much more difficult now.
Yeah.
You're making it hard for me. But it's separated, and you can't just stroll in when you want to. You have to have somebody actually check you in, and they take your ID, and they write it down, and you got to be out by a certain time.
Cool.
I know, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So given that, it's important to be able to maintain visitation. But it happens, I think, probably every year at some point somebody does something where visitation is taken away. It's revoked.
Wait, from that person or from everybody?
From everybody. Oh, wow. They'll ruin it for everybody. That's how it goes. It's not like, you know, some people might lose their individual visitation, but trust me, there's enough collective action. Some folks will get together and do something that's worthy of visitation being suspended. So that's bound to happen. And so, classic, like it would any other year, my freshman year, we had it happen, where visitation got revoked. Mm. You know, and Brothers is upset, you know, because it comes to, you know, it's Friday night, and it's like, so you talking on the phone, trying to have a girl come through. He's like, don't y'all not have visitation? And so this happened one time, and I was like, well, don't worry about it. Look, come through. I'll take care of it. And so she's like, okay, but it's cold, so don't just have me out here. And I knew that down in the basement, there was a side door where you could actually open up, and there was supposedly a camera there, but rumor was that it didn't work. So these are covert moves that got planned, trying to not only like invite this young lady inside, but also avoid, you know, because there's RAs around, we have security and that kind of a thing. So I pulled some Mission Impossible moves, basically, in order to have a young lady visitor. And so, you know, that's kind of what
you succeeded.
I did succeed.
Wow.
I did succeed.
I thought you were going to say you, like, ruined visitation for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, not me. No. I was better than that, you know.
Nice.
Like I said, I'd studied Mission Impossible by that time. So I had, the moves were coordinated. The intel was on point. So we were good there.
There you go. So all you Howard students, listen. No. In the dorm, there's a basement. The camera doesn't work. Yeah. So.
Probably still out there like that. But it's funny because, you know, experiences like that, you know, I took some of those and, you know, when I started, like, writing and stuff later on, injected those into stories that I would tell. So, you know, life can be inspiring in interesting ways. And so I took that, and it's in a script that called Douglas U, that is actually in post-production now. It's a feature film. So that story is kind of infused into the plot, and it's based on, you know, the real-life actual experiences.
Gotcha. Now, so, so speaking about Douglas U, because you started this, you produced it, and you wrote it. Right, and did you direct it too, or is it?
No, I did not direct it. We had I was fortunate to have, you know, a lot of great people to help me out with getting Douglas U made. Mm. You know, Charles Belk was one of the other producers on the film. Really, you know, led the charge in taking it from a script to, you know, actually getting it produced, because, you know, no one person can get something done. And so, you know, it was my kind of creative inspiration that was, you know, it's a bit of a I'll call it semi-autobiographical. It takes pieces of you know, my own life, but it was a lot of fun to do, and, you know, we can't wait to get it out for people to check it out, because it's, you know, a really funny film that's got its touching moments. It's got a nice little romance sprinkled in there too, so, you know, everybody can enjoy it.
Yeah, that's how romance starts.
Many a love story has been sparked sneaking through a basement. Okay, don't deny it, don't doubt it. We've all been there.
So I guess probably what was like the main thing that inspired you to put this script on paper and really get it made? Like, was there one story like, oh my god, if this was a movie, it would be?
It was a collection probably of ideas and scenes, and, you know, the sneaking in the dorm was one of them. But then there were just, like, characters that stuck out to me that I was like, all right, I got to write this now. I don't know how it's going to come together yet, but this needs to be in there. And so that's really how the writing process started. It was like a collection of kind of scenes that I was like, all right, this would be funny if this happened, and this would be funny if this happened, and we'll put it together somehow. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of like that, how it started. And, you know, sitting down and writing it out was... It was an incredible learning process, you know, for me personally. And it took the beauty of writing I've come to appreciate is it's not in the writing, it's in the rewriting. So even when, you know, I thought I was done, and I remember at one point I thought I was done. I had this script and I was trying to show it to people and have them read it. And I had some people who were better writers than me be like, you might want to revisit, like, page 30 through 60 and, you know, rework some things. And so it was like taking the time to go back and, you know, revisit, you know, the story and kind of fine-tune it that ultimately, you know, better serve the outcome of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you also did a film called Caged Animal.
Yes.
Right? With Ving Rhames.
With Brother Ving Rhames.
Right?
Yes.
So
yes,
what was it like working with Ving Rhames?
Ving Rhames, he's probably... He's an incredible actor, first. He's got such a diverse body of work where he's played such dramatically different characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so impressed by that because he does them all very believably. But he is... He's so much like that on-screen persona. Like, when I'm talking to him in real life, I felt like any second, like, if I said something crazy, he was just going to, like, smack the hell out of me. I was like, okay, we're going to keep it real, real courteous right now, Mr. Rhames, just so I don't get baby-boyed right now. But, no, he was dope. He was very giving in the sense that, you know, me being a young actor, he had a lot to impart as far as... talking about, you know, the craft of acting, but the business as well, and he was very gracious in giving it, you know. You know, I was very, you know, and naturally, when you have the opportunity to work with someone who's as legendary as him, I was very inquisitive about his experience and trying to pick up as much as possible, and he was very open about that. And, you know, working with him was a pleasure, honestly.
Was it intimidating, like, going one-on-one, you know, toe-to-toe with Ving Rhames?
A little bit, because if folks don't know the film, he plays like a very hardened like criminal,
yeah.
And so he owns that, you know, very well, and he has no problem like carrying that over into, yeah, you know, whether the camera's rolling or not, he'll just be in it. And so I can think back, this made it into the movie, something that wasn't actually scripted. Like, we had started the scene, and I think we'd done it maybe once or twice. And, you know, I said a line, like, I was asking him something, and, can I curse on this show?
Yeah.
Okay. And he was like, yo, motherfucker, why you talking so loud? Just talk to me. In his Ving Rhames voice.
Mm.
And I was, like, taken aback. I was like, oh, it wasn't in the script. I was thrown off. I was like, sorry, sir, I didn't mean to. But it was like, he kept me on my toes, because he was all about being in the moment and being true to, you know, that character. And so that kind of helped me stay in my role of like this punk kid, actually. So it worked out for the sake of what was going on in the scene.
Very cool. Well, you now star on Bounce TV's My Crazy Roommate.
Yes.
There you go.
Absolutely. You play Future, the spoken word revolutionary.
That is absolutely right.
And considering that you're quite the writer yourself, how much of Hadi do we see in Future?
That's a good question. I mean, I think for me, with any role, a part of me kind of gets shown. But with Future, I did have a special love for Future. And I tell you what, I've done like this much spoken word in my life. So it's not like I feel like I have a little poet in here somewhere. But going to Howard, I knew those guys. Like, I knew dudes who were like, wore like a mesh tank top and was like talking about sister mother to the earth. That's queen beat, and then it was just like, yo, dude, are you serious, right? No, snapping and being like, for real, people, we need to understand the trees are our friends, and when the wind bends, and yeah, it's like, yo, what are you talking about right now? So I love Future so much because I get to pull on, you know, those things that I remember and be able to put that into it. So you get a lot of my experiences in Future, and so... You know, I have the best time, you know, playing that character and seeing, you know, the stuff that they write for us to do. And then having a little bit of extra freedom to, like, add some of those things that I'm familiar with. And so it's great. You do see a good amount of me in there. You do.
Are there any parts of your character in particular that you relate to?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's very... He's very aspirational, you know. He is looking for things to improve. You know, he's not one who will look at a situation and accept it as is. He would look for things to be better than they are. And so, you know, that's something that I try to have that same kind of view of things, to, you know, always look for a way to improve a situation or No, he's helpful as well. Mm-hmm. So I have that aspect to my personality for sure.
Well, Future is a little bit, he seems a bit Afrocentric, if you will.
That'd be fair.
My brother.
He has a pendant or eight. Yeah. Yes.
What
yes,
initially attracted you to this role?
Well, when I first read the breakdown, like, when I said immediately, I was like, I know this guy. And when I actually got a chance to read the script, I was like, I want this so bad. Because I know that I'd be able to have so much fun with it. And, you know, I have a real goofy side. And so Future, even though he is as righteous as he is, you know, a lot of stuff he does is like, dude, will you sit down? Like, go sit down somewhere, please. Yeah. And so I get to, like, step into that fully. Like, we haven't seen any of the episodes where we actually do, or I do some of the spoken word stuff. I don't think we have aired yet. And so they let me just kind of, like, get up there and go with it. So, you know, some of that stuff was, like, some of those off the wall, but hilarious moments was kind of like doing that freestyle spoken word poetry with like some bongos just like knocking it out. So
well, we've had quite a few of your castmates on here.
You have.
We've had Brittany, Layla, Greg, and now you guys all seem like a really fun crew. Like, what is that atmosphere like on set with all of you guys together?
That is absolutely a great way to describe it. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better group. You know, I think even though we didn't know each other at all coming into this experience, almost immediately by like the second day, it was like we're cracking jokes with one another, we're having fun together, and you know, this is before we're even shooting anything. Yeah. This is just, you know, us like, you know, talking and stuff on the side. And then when we actually got on and on the set and got to play around and interact, I think that's what comes out. You know, that's what makes a great ensemble work. And, you know, we have a great dynamic with each other. Like, we genuinely enjoy hanging out, which is one of those things that I see, you know, folks don't always get a chance to say that about people that they work with.
Yeah.
So I feel very fortunate to have that be the case with this group.
It's important.
It absolutely is. You know, if you add a job and you can't stand the people you work with, it's like, I can't wait to go home. See, I know. I understand. I had to throw a little shade.
Yeah. Wow. I really throw shade over at Jessica, so I had to throw a little shade.
Wow.
So, Hottie.
Quick transition.
Moving on. Right.
And so.
Since you know, you write and you produce and everything, what was the experience like really working with Bentley Kyle Evans?
He is nothing short of amazing. I mean, this is a guy who's been just involved in entertainment working for years and years and years and has, like, classics under his belt, like certifiable classics that folks will always remember. But here he is still now trying to, you know, still create, still bring up, you know, new talent that folks may not have necessarily heard of and give him a vehicle to shine.
Yeah.
And so I was... One, you know, excited to be able to work with them, and then being able to collaborate and share ideas, and even with all of his experience, having him be open to what me as an actor might be able to bring and say, hey, Ben, you know, is it all right if I try this out? And having him be like, yeah, go for it. We'll see where it goes. I remember the first time we sat down for a table read was everybody and the writers in the room, and, you know, after we got down to it, he said, you know, this isn't an environment of work. I want you guys to come in here and play. I want you guys to come with that every time. And that's where we're going to find, you know, the magic in what we're doing. And so he set that tone from the beginning, and it was infectious.
That's cool.
Yeah. He's been incredible.
Is it crazy to be like, yo, I have Bentley Kyle Evans in my phone right now?
It kind of is, though. It kind of is. I'll be like, yeah, I'm gonna holler at Bent real quick. You know what I'm saying? He may not answer, but I don't let everybody else know that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna holler at Bent. Oh, he was on the other line. I'm calling back, you know. But it is. It's because it's like he's been around, you know, for so long. And so being able to be like, yeah, like I've worked with him on a project. It's something that it's a fantastic feeling.
Yeah. So now with 5 episodes left, right, in this first season, what can we expect to see from Future?
Things only get better for Future. Things only get more entertaining from Future. Like
romantical,
I said.
Maybe?
See, I think I got the word that they want to save that for season two. Die. So what we need folks to do now is tune in so we can get that season two pickup. And then Future can, you know, step out and really have the opportunity to find his sister queen, you know, mother to the earth, daughter to the sun, and, you know, have that romantic opportunity.
Yeah.
So we don't see that yet, but we do have some hilarious stuff still coming. So you want to make sure every Monday night, 7 p.m. Pacific time here, 10 p.m. Eastern, on Bounce TV, that folks are tuning in to check us out.
There you go. Maybe, you know, Future can have a Nubian white queen or something, you know.
Hey, you know. See?
You gotta
play the opposite. You gotta hit them with the unexpected.
Exactly.
They don't see that coming.
Exactly.
You know,
she'll have a little afro too.
Yeah, exactly. She'll be down for call.
Blonde afro. Wow.
It'll be cute. I don't know. It'll be cute.
I don't know. You'll have I don't know, some Future's core audience might hate him after that, but I feel where you're going, though. Yeah. It'll be comedy, that's for sure.
Exactly.
That is for sure.
Speaking of comedy, so I mean, that seems to be one of the main themes in your project, you know, with your role on My Crazy Roommate.
Mm.
But even a lot of your personal projects are comedy-driven as well. And so, but do you consider yourself a comedian?
Not in the stand-up sense, because I feel like that's somewhere I really haven't taken it to. But, you know, I think my natural personality is more given to comedy. And so that's probably why, you know, if I'm writing a project, that's kind of what speaks to me more.
Mm.
But, you know, almost a lot of the things I've been doing lately are more comedy. But, you know, I've a very strong, you know, dramatic background, you know.
Yeah.
Going back to doing, you know, doing theater and doing, like, those classical pieces, doing, like, the Euripides and, you know, Shakespeare and those kind of things. And, you know, it's something that I enjoy doing as well. But, you know, right now, comedy is what's going. So yeah. I'm laughing all the way, basically.
Yeah.
That's the idea. That's the idea, yes. That is exactly what we're trying to do. But, yeah, it's something that I love doing. And, you know, I certainly would hope to be doing more of. But, you know, the drama is there when, you know, the right opportunity presents itself. You know, brother can get all emotional if he's got to. You know what I'm saying? Was that supposed to be the snap
to
go?
Yeah,
was that the go snap? Was that the... Just something in my eye.
See? Hey, you're great for a spirit award. You know, that right there?
That right there? That'll
great
do
for
it?
A spirit award,
see,
yeah.
That's where I'm going next, you know?
Well, as a black actor in this industry, you know, there's a lot of...
I had to throw it up.
There's a lot of ignorant people
actor.
Out there. As a black
yes.
African-American actor.
That I am.
You know, there's a lot of ignorant people out there, especially here in Hollywood. Do you ever find that people's expectations of you fall into some of the stereotypical categories, like the token black guy, that funny black guy? Like, how do you manage to steer clear of some of those stereotypes?
As when you started this question with the as a black actor today, I was like, oh, it's about to be serious. well, you know what?
This
I think
is serious.
It is. You're right. It's all serious. I think when it comes to stereotypes, what I've experienced more than anything is what I see is there are, you know, types of characters that tend to, you know, be very prevalent in, you know, TV and film. And when you're up and coming, you're not in a position to necessarily say, I'll do that role, but not that role. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to write some depth to my character. Like, you don't necessarily have, you know, that the chance to do that. And so I think it's important to understand what it is you're comfortable with and what it is you're not. So I've played roles what you might consider like a, perhaps it could be considered a stereotype. For example, like I did a role for Discovery ID on their show Wicked Attraction. It was a criminal. You know, he was a murderer, he's a criminal. And so folks might be like, you're perpetuating the stereotype of, you know, black men in prison. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. You know, that's an argument you can have. But for me, it was an opportunity to really, you know, explore an ideology and a psychology completely different from mine and, you know, really dive into it and, you know, bring it to life, hopefully, and you know, create a piece of work that, you know, was something that was distinctive, mm-hmm. and that, you know, people could kind of feel and relate to. And I felt like, you know, in doing that, it was more than just a stereotype. You know, it was bringing something to life. And, you know, I think as an artist, you got to be careful about, you know, what it is that you do and you don't do. And ultimately, I think you got to be able to sleep at night with what it is that you do. You know, me personally, it's more than just that, because I feel like I'm not just responsible to myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I still have to go home and, like, look my mom in the face. And if she's like, honey, what the heck were you doing here? Mm-hmm. What is this? Yeah. I'd be like, oh, yeah, all right, you're right, mom. I was tripping. So those kind of things definitely come into my mind when I think of, you know, doing a role that's potentially, you know, considered stereotypical or not. But, again, I mean, I can think of, you could say, I'm trying to think of a role that pops into my mind as, you know, there's a potential for stereotype a lot, but I think it's what, you know, someone can bring to a role mm-hmm. to really highlight different aspects and make it a true human rendition. Right. You know, you could look at, I don't know, I'm thinking of Denzel in Training Day comes to mind, but I don't know, you could look at him as like, oh, he's the bad cop. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely was, but, you know, when you're able to bring different dimensions to a character, it's more than just a stereotype. Right. And that's, you know, the job of the artist to elevate the material, you know.
Are there any roles that you would absolutely not take?
I mean, I imagine there are. If you could think of, like, the whole encyclopedia of roles and be like, yeah, I'm sure there's something like, I'm not about to be, like, that dude from Pulp Fiction.
That was your co-star, man.
No. I wasn't talking about that. Hold up. No, I was talking about dude who was chained in the basement. I forget what they called him. But do you remember dude who's chained in the basement with the latex on his face?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm like, I'm not necessarily jumping to do that role. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it would just depend on a lot of what the circumstances are, you know, who's involved with a potential project, you know, mm-hmm. what's the full life of what that character is. Cause everybody has, you know, times in their life that are regrettable. You know, there are things that you may do. You're like, oh, that you look back on that you hope no one ever knows about or gets to see. And sometimes when you're in a character, those are things that get highlighted, you know, those are things that are cinematic at times. And so as an actor, you have to be willing to put away some of what those personal withholdings might be and be able to go there and do so in an honest fashion. So, you know, I'm game for a lot of things. So it would have to be something pretty out there to really have me be like, oh, nah, I can't even.
I want to throw something out there, but
go ahead.
No, we're not.
What?
Holiday Heart?
It's so funny as you said, because I asked him about Holiday Heart.
Okay.
I was like, what was the motivation? What was going on there? You know, for folks who don't know, Holiday Heart was a film that Bing Rames did where he played a woman in drag.
Yeah.
Or a man in drag. And he was like, look, I love the script. Mm-hmm. I really like the story, and I wanted to do something different. And, you know, I'm proud of what it was. And I was like, well, damn, you know, I can't really say much about that. Because aside from if a role is not of quality is one thing, but being scared to do something is something else entirely. You know, and I think as an actor, you know, when you embrace the idea of what you're doing, you're bringing life to a character.
Yeah.
You have to be open to the full realm of human experience and what that may require you to do. So your personal misgivings may not necessarily be the best thing to serve you in bringing that character to life. So, you know, I feel like if you're about it, you're about it, you know. And if the project is quality, then there might just be fear that, you know, that holds you back. And for me, you know, I try to let that not be a motivator as much as possible, you know.
If you weren't acting, what would you be doing?
Oh, shoot. Let my mom tell it, I'd be in law school. But I could see myself, I could see that. I might be a lawyer. I could be that. Because there's that, there's that element of theater. It's so theatrical, you know, when when you get that your opening statement and the closing remarks, and you know, you get to play out to your audience, which is the jury, and get extra dramatic. You know how they do. Yeah.
Got to get them to believe you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got to sell it. You got to sell it. That's what makes, you know, that's what made like Johnny Cochran so memorable is Johnny would sell it. You know, he would do the whole glove thing. He had his props ready, you know. He hit his marks and he knew what he was doing. And so there's that element of theater that comes into it so much. So that would probably be, I could see myself doing that.
That's a really cool way to look at it.
Yeah. What has been your biggest struggle thus far in your career?
I think my biggest struggle has probably been, it's probably been a personal one, you know, because I feel like at one point I wasn't entirely sure. I wasn't confident in what I wanted to do. I wasn't confident in, even though I was like, oh, I want to be an actor, I wasn't confident in my pursuit. And so naturally in that, it was like, you know, things wouldn't necessarily move forward like you wanted to, because when you're doing something half-heartedly, you can't expect, you know, real results. And so I think getting to a point where, you know, kind of like what I was just talking about, being an artist and owning that and, you know, being comfortable with, you know, what that life is about and what that requires, that was probably, I guess, getting to the point where I embraced that. It was probably one of the biggest, probably one of the biggest struggles. And now it's like it makes everything else moving forward, I think, easier to accept. Because it's like, oh, this is part of the journey. Yeah. It's going to be part of what it is. You know, this is the path that I'm on. And so whatever may come into it is going to be, you know, in some way, form, or fashion, a way to build onto what I'm going to do.
Gotcha. Now, but do you feel that you have a better grasp on your career and the industry since, you know, you're from LA, you're born here, and you've been doing, you know, in and out auditions?
You know, I think starting early did help me in the sense that, you know, I got used to rejection early, and you know, I had the chance to like kind of get over it some, and you know, so it's not as much of an issue. But I didn't really start learning about I think the real ins and outs of Hollywood and the business and those kind of things until, you know, I came back to LA as an adult and started working, you know, behind the scenes and, you know, seeing what it takes to put a production together or put a TV show together or pull a film together. It's like, it's not just, I show up and here's my script. Like, it's a whole nother world of things that has to happen, you know, before that can even come to pass. And so, you know, I would credit that the coming back with more of, you know, what my learning was than, you know, when I was a kid, you know, not really knowing as much.
Yeah.
Not really knowing what the full realm of what things really were about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, you've had the privilege of dabbling in quite a few different aspects of the industry, both in front of and behind the scenes. You've acted, you've directed, produced, wrote. What is your preference?
Acting. For sure.
That's, do you feel that you're a better actor because of your knowledge of all of the different...
Oh, without a doubt. Yes, totally. I would say, you know, I started writing... I would say I'm an actor and a writer who has produced, and I have directed some. You know, I wouldn't necessarily put that full director hat on yet. But yeah, I mean, I think because you understand when it comes to, you know, storytelling, which is what you do as in all four of those, it's an aspect of storytelling, but acting is just, you know, a piece of it. But you know, when you understand the full scope of the story as a writer, you understand your part that you have to play even better as an actor, and you can, you know, better serve that. And even wider as a director, because you're responsible for the collective. And so, you know, I'm certainly a much more, I think, a smarter actor and an actor who is, like, much more easier to work with on a set. Because, like, I can make it easier, you know, for a director. I can understand if he says, you know, something, I might be able to understand his note better than, you know, I might have not having done it before. So I absolutely recommend that to any and all like actors out there to do another discipline, try another discipline. Even if you never are saying, oh, I'm going to shoot my script or whatever, try it out, because it'll make you that much more knowledgeable, and you don't know what you don't know.
I agree.
You do not know what you do not know. So you got to, you know, jump in there and try it out.
That's true. And because you've worked in many different genres. You know, we've done TV, you've done film or something. You've even done, or you worked behind the scenes on some game shows and reality TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of legitimate actors feel that reality is garbage to So how do you feel about the reality TV world, seeing that you've seen, you know, the other side of it?
Oh, I've seen the other side of it? Yeah. Well, well, I'll say I don't really watch it because I just don't necessarily find it, you know, entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's a very, and, you know, a kind of a low-level entertainment in my mind. So I don't really enjoy it in that sense. But, you know, even then, working on it was a valuable thing because I can understand how those shows come together. And, you know, when I look at something and see those moments, I'm like, yeah, I remember.
There's an edit.
Yeah. Probably like, oh, okay. And, you know, you look at the confessional and you see how they cut him, like, oh, yeah, that's not what she really said. Okay. All right. I see how
that
framed
cutaway right there?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, oh, okay. I see how that went. So, I do get to kind of experience it with a different set of eyes in that sense. But, you know, I value the experience. I hopefully would never have to do it again. Hopefully. But, you know, I certainly value the experience of it, for sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you seem to have a lot of great aspirations, and it's become very clear that you're quite the doer. So before we wrap up, we just like to give you a little bit of an opportunity to tell us about any other upcoming projects you might be working on or what we could expect to see from you, where we could stalk you some more.
Ooh,
it's kind of like your bragging moment.
I feel like you haven't made it until you had like a stalker or two.
Right?
So I'm recruiting. Like if anyone out there is interested, we can work something out. Yeah, we can work something out. But you can find me at on Twitter and Instagram and at Hottie Williams, just my name, H-A-R-I Williams. My Facebook page is just Hottie Williams the Actor, facebook.com/Hottie Williams the Actor. So you can check out, you know, follow my movements where I might be on there. But upcoming projects, again, Douglas U, it's in post-production now.
Okay.
Folks can visit the site and read up on the film, see the other actors in the film. There's some great talented folks in there like Tommy Ford and D. Woods and... so it's at douglasu.com, D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S-U, as in university.com. And I also produce a web series that's currently online at the moment. It's called Houghton U, and it's a comedy, again, set at a historically black college, created by my friend Ashford Thomas, who I went to Howard with, and we both act in it together, and it is hilarious. So I've been told. And so you can check that out online right now, too. It's at HowtonU.com. It's just HOWTONU.com. And, you know, upcoming projects will hopefully will be a My Crazy Roommate Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from that, you know, I'm, you know, working daily right now on writing some new stuff. So, you know, I don't have anybody calling me to be on set at the moment. hint. feel free to hit the phone. I'm writing right now because I always have, you know, stories going on in my head that I feel like I gotta sit down and get out. Absolutely. So I got some new stuff coming in that respect. And I think that's probably that's it at the moment. My Crazy Roommate. Tune in for that. Bounce TV. If you don't have Bounce TV, go on the site, bouncetv.com. They'll tell you here in LA, it's 13.2, but wherever you may be watching from, they have a tab that says Find Us, so that they will list exactly your city and state so that you can find out what channel Bounce TV is in your area, so you can tune in every Monday night.
Very cool.
And check it out.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, sir.
No, really we're done already. Goodness gracious, you
time
guys.
Time flies.
It does.
You're having fun.
I get in here hanging out with y'all on this comfy couch. I don't feel like I want to get up and go anywhere yet, but thank you guys so much for having me. I so enjoyed it.
Of course, and you can find me on Twitter at I am Jessica King. Nick, where can we find you?
All
just
over
kidding.
The internet.
Anyway, I'm just kidding.
She was. Yeah, you earned that one. You had
you
that one coming. Yeah,
you can find me all over the internet at the Nick Padu.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. Until next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Dario Kristen, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the
Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.